clerk, 97-2182. Ms. Brown, you have filed a motion. The clerk was suspended, indefinitely suspended by this court, and you filed a motion indicating that he continues to practice law. Contempt of our order. I think we'll have you go first, since the user had his time, but it's your motion. So, Mr. Kirk, do you want to come up to the table?
Mr. Philip Kirk was indefinitely suspended from practice of law on May 20th, 1998. Since that point, in several different instances, he has continued to practice of law in violation of this court order. He has also failed to comply with the specific requirements of the court order. The court has before it in our motion for an order to appear and show cause the specific instances in which he has continued to practice law. I believe there are other points that need to be made. Mr. Kirk has maintained that he has been too sick to respond to matters that have come before him regarding his continuous practice of law. He has maintained that he's been unable to respond because of his illness. However, when you look at the motion for the order to show cause, I would ask you to note that Mr. Kirk appeared in court or met with clients, I'm using that in quotes, at least 10 times since his suspension. I also personally spoke with him at least 7 times since his suspension. That to me does not sound like an individual who is incapable of functioning. Now, whether or not Mr. Kirk has some physical or mental problems, I don't know, because we asked Mr. Kirk for documentation regarding his problems. Last summer, we have yet to receive anything from any of his treating physicians. I will tell you that just this morning, we received something from one treating physician, but that's the first thing that we have seen. The affidavits that were submitted with our motion for an order to show cause provide clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Kirk has, in fact, continued to practice law and continued to take money from individuals to provide representation. And perhaps one of the most disturbing parts about Mr. Kirk's conduct since his suspension is he has failed to return client materials. Consequently, individuals like Wendy Banana and Delta Cat have had Donald Poe have had their materials taken by Mr. Kirk, put somewhere, I don't know where, and not returned to them. Consequently, people have had to reconstruct files. They've had to hire additional lawyers to reconstruct those files, all at a loss to those individuals. I think probably the most disturbing instance of Mr. Kirk's conduct in this case is the time that he, in fact, signed into court using another individual's name and said he was appearing for him. And as it turns out, Michael LeGrasso had never even heard of the company that Mr. Kirk told Judge Gallagher he represented. And I find that in and of itself a violation of 110284, but in direct contempt of this court order.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Kirk, you may respond.
Judges that had any of my open cases. I am the advocate. What about the return of their files?
Well, I was going to get to that.
Oh.
In every one of the instances where we had an open case that was being transferred, I asked the client if they wanted to hire their own counsel or if they wanted me to help them find responsible counsel. In every situation, including Donald Pope, they had asked me to help them retain counsel. And one of the good reasons for that is that historically, I have always told people, even though they didn't have any money, in every one of these cases, every one of them, they could not afford to give a retainer. They wanted to make periodic payments, and it was questionable whether or not they could retain counsel without being committed to a substantial retainer.
Mr. Kurtz, you have also helped yourself to clients' money.
That is not true.
Well, you're still denying it, I guess.
Let me explain it to you. I will do that.
That's not on the table today. I would prefer you address Justice Resnick's question about returning files.
Well, the files...
Are all files returned to clients?
They are not returned. The case of the counsel that would be representing the client in the Gurkhardt case, that was given to the lawyer Scott Bronson. I never had the file. The first time I met her with Mr. Bronson, I gave him the file. I still don't have the file. And afterward, I heard that the client terminated the representation of Mr. Bronson. And I do not know why, except that I heard indirectly that he demanded a major retainer of $1,500, which he took it for. In regard to the other files, they all went with the client. Every single one of them, the DRG file went to Beverly Briggs in Bedford. The major file for Donald Polk was never asked for. I didn't even know the counsel that was retained for him by the judge.
Well, you'd give the file back to the client, wouldn't you? You don't have to know who the lawyer is. You give it back to the client. The client's property.
No client asking for the file. And the process was to give it to the successor lawyer.
The court order suspending you? Because it directs you to return the client's files and to notify them, doesn't it?
Yes, ma'am, in part, but once again, I used my judgment in asking the question what they wanted to do, and they all suggested that I help them retain counsel. So, progressively, all I did was when the new counsel agreed to take the case, I just gave them the files because they asked me for it.
What did our order tell you to do? What did our order tell you to do?
Well, probably an error of my judgment in determining that the file should go to the successor lawyer. But
what's your response? You got service in the motion filed by Justice Counsel. We have nothing in writing from you, no response from you, so we're sort of disadvantaged to have you sort of stand here and tell us what happened, but the Lagrasso matter, the trial judge claims that you, an affidavit claims that you represented that there was a lawyer representing client.
The allegations that were made in the manner in which they were made are absolutely wrong. I went planning to transfer my practice because I was ill. Lawyer Michael Lagrasso, I knew him for many years, and I encouraged him to be a lawyer. And he had been practicing for 4 or 5 years. He's been practicing in South Euclid, Ohio. And we made arrangements that I would transfer all of my cases. give notice about this case. He couldn't make it because he had other commitments the next morning, and I proceeded with the idea that I would go there and explain before anything happened that I was suspended and that I wasn't there as a lawyer, which I did. I met with the bailiff first. I explained that I was not there as counsel, and the bailiff ordered me to put down Mr. LaGrasse's name and show who did it. I did. And when we met with the judge, I met with the opposing counsel before we went before the judge, and I explained to him that I was suspended, that I wasn't there as a lawyer. All I was there for is to get explained that the LaGrasse couldn't file a notice of representation and appear in court.
Well, the judge says that you said you're having some problems and he'd be expected to be reinstated very shortly.
That's not true.
Okay, so the judge is not
the judge is not correct. I never met her before. It'd be nice to have an affidavit
from you here to challenge the veracity of the judge. It'd be nice to have an affidavit in the file from you saying that.
Well,
so we know what we could make a factual determination.
In regard to that case, then I will answer your original question. There is question that when I first went into the room, I was the first one to speak. I told the judge I was suspended. I told her why I was there, to avoid the judge issuing a default judgment in favor of the plaintiff, and I just asked for a continuance so that Mr. LaGrasse could appear.
Was this on the record, do you know? Was there a record being made of that?
Well, it was done in the judge's chambers. The lawyer on the other side, he heard it. He was there with me, and when we went out together, we both were shaking our heads as to why the judge attacked me. The judge knew I was suspended. I didn't ask for anything more than enough to explain, and that was the end of it. But to answer your question about why I didn't file any documents, and I humbly tell you that this is true, and there's no question I can provide to the disciplinary counsel and the court that the truth. I have been ill for many years. I have diabetes. I have celiac spur, which is a disease of the intestine. I have dermatitis pediformis, which is a skin ailment. And I have very severe depression. I've been in psychiatric care for many years. I'm staying alive, and with my suspension, it became far more complicated. I was overwhelmed at my suspension. I had never agreed to the allegation that I had committed a violation of ethics. Unfortunately, the people that made the decision, which included the disciplinary counsel, and of course, they didn't agree with me. And I was indefinitely suspended in one court order. My entire career of 35 years was destroyed. And that was very difficult for me to take. It's still difficult for me to take. I'm overwhelmed by it. And as a result of that, I went into severe depression, and I didn't talk to anybody. I haven't opened my mail for months. I don't read the newspapers. I don't do anything. And I see a psychiatrist, and I see a psychologist. I take antidepressants. It's important in I take medicine for my diseases. I have two opposing diets that contradict each other, which makes it difficult to eat. I totally bedridden every day.
Is Mr. LaGrasso, the district counsel makes the statement that Mr. LaGrasso has been representing you in your discipline matters pro bono, is that right?
Well, he decided originally to do that. I had asked him some time ago. But when the disciplinary counsel called him to inquire about the DRT case, LaGrasso explained to me that he didn't want it in any way to be involved with the disciplinary counsel. He didn't want them to know that he did it alive. He was afraid of the disciplinary counsel, and he told me very nicely that he did not want to represent him. And he didn't get into any detail about the representation. And to this day, he feels that way. He was going to come here today to confirm the fact that we had planned back in February of 1998 for him to take my practice.
Did he consider putting that in writing to us?
Pardon?
Did he consider putting that in writing, giving you a letter to get to
he
us?
He did. He made his statement very short. He told me about it. I know that he was going to come here today with me to explain it, but he had a docket and he thought he was in the civil court. And he could not come. But more importantly, if I may approach the court.
Okay, very quickly, I think we need, right. need to sum up.
I had been wrong in not responding to all of the complaints. And I give you my excuse that I've been seriously ill. Nothing works inside me, my mind or anything else. And I'd like to rehabilitate myself. Before you make a judgment as to whether I'm in contempt of court, I would like to ask the court for time to submit my impressions of these activities and of any other documentation that would support my position before you resolve the issue. I've asked that as a disciplinary counsel, they've made it clear that they don't control the case anymore, the court doesn't. And I would appeal to the court if he has time to file a response in every one of the cases, including these that are in the motion. I've already responded to the Pope case. You have the exhibit. There's nothing more I can say in that case. But in the other cases, I can unequivocally prove by affidavit and by the historical steps I took. One, that I have not practiced law since May 27th.
Did you agree in August to prepare a will for Estelle?
No. Let me explain that.
That's not true either.
That's not true.
Do you get the $150?
No, sir, that's not true. Let me explain it to you. Back in the 1950s, I had a client who was mentally ill with a woman. And on Saturday afternoon, she called me and wanted me to meet with her and be with her. She was all alone. She was crying and upset. I couldn't do it. I did not do it. And 2 hours later, her daughter called me and said the woman committed suicide.
Okay, well, I don't need to know. I just want to know, did you draft the will? You said no.
No, I did not draft the will. The $150 issue doesn't even relate to the will.
Okay, fine.
Now, when this lady called me...
Would you have drafted the will had she not committed suicide?
Pardon?
Would you have drafted the will had she not committed suicide?
No, I'm talking about the 30-year case in the 60s.
Okay.
And as a result of that incident, that's when right. anybody calls me and they're in trouble, I go there personally and talk with them. I have never violated that responsibility, and that's what I did with this lady. She called me on a Thursday night. She was very upset. She was going into the hospital, and she wanted to make a revision of her will. She was totally overwhelmed.
But did you tell her that you were unable to practice law?
I told her, and she gave when I went to her house, and only because her house was directly across the street from me where my former office was. I went in there and she proceeded immediately to tell me how she was upset. And she gave me the permission to change to. In my entire career, I've never charged anybody for typing a will. Never. And I told her that I was going to get someone to type the document. She needed it the next day. She was going into the hospital to see me. And I told her that I would have somebody type it, and there would be no charge. And in the course of doing that, she's also talked about her estate planning and what to do. She's all alone. And we talk about maybe our attorney. We talk about making a testamentary trust. She talked about the documents that she had at home, and she didn't know what to do. She had a fire. And I recommended that, and I had the box all these years. Clients put the materials in an envelope, didn't seal it. They marked their name on it and put it in the box. I've done that for years, and there's never been any charge for that service. And I mentioned it to her, I still had the box. And I did all of those things regarding the $150. She asked me what it would cost to make a testamentary trust or a testamentary will. And I told her it would probably start at about $150. I told her I didn't know because I don't know what the lawyers would charge her. I did not offer to do anything for her. Myself. I don't think it's necessary for me to tell every new person I meet that I'm suspended. That's embarrassing enough for me. And she needed some help. I went there and she was crying and upset. And I sat there and I listened for an hour. had already prepared the document herself. She was up, she took a position in the process. She had been a secretary for 20 or 30 years. And she knew all about the law, and she gave me pieces of paper. She didn't give me a file. She gave me pieces of paper that were photocopies of what she wanted done. And she asked me to arrange to have it done. And I agreed to do it, but unfortunately, I wasn't able to do it the next day. I was ill. I was incapacitated. I didn't have anybody to substitute for me or to deal with the issue.
I think we've heard your response to the question. Thank you. That's your time is up. Thank you. Brown, take 2 minutes.
Thank you. I'll just address a couple of the issues. First of all, I find it completely offensive that Mr. Kurtz would describe Judge Gallagher as a liar, for lack of a better word. The statement from Judge Gallagher was made within an hour of the hearing in her courtroom, in which Mr. Kurtz indicated that Michael DeGrasso was going to appear for DRG Hydraulics. What Mr. Kurtz also fails to understand is that you just don't turn your law practice over to someone else. His statements about his conversations with Michael DeGrasso about he's going to turn his practice over to him, there's no follow-through. Perhaps there were conversations with him. I don't know whether there were or not. But you don't just magically get your practice turned over to someone else if you're suspended from the practice of law. The issue of whether Mr. LaGrasso would have made a statement to this court that contradicts a letter that appears in your pleading, I talked to Michael LaGrasso 2 days ago, and he didn't make any sort of statement like that to me. I find that completely impossible to believe. He did represent Mr. Kurtz in proceedings before the Cuyahoga County Bar. He withdrew after this incident with DRG Hydraulics. Mr. Kurtz's disciplinary hearing in front of Cuyahoga County was in September. The transcript was provided to the panel in October. The panel has not yet made a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners, so that is also still pending. Finally, regarding his statements about returning the files to different people, I personally requested that Doug would get materials. I'm going to say in September. I don't have anything from him. Neither does Wendy Vidal. There are other individuals who are even not being to be pleased. So with that, I will conclude. Disciplinary counsel believes very strongly that Mr. Kurtz is, in fact, in contempt of this court order.
Thank you. The case is submitted. Marshal, please turn to court.